Welcome to another AudioMotivation.com interview. I'm Andy O'Brien, and today it is our privilege to welcome Stephen Pressfield. Stephen, welcome to Audio Motivation.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Our Audio Motivation members are students of success, drive, persistence, overcoming obstacles, and your latest book, The Virtues of War, gives the reader a study of Alexander. And this book kind of goes beyond other books and the most recent movie on Alexander, and it gives more of a unique first-person analysis of the greatness of him. Now, my first question here is, do you believe that all of us, as mortals like Alexander was, possess the seeds of greatness?
I do. Now, of course, greatness is a good question of how you define it. It doesn't necessarily mean conquering the world or anything. It can mean starting your own restaurant, you know, or writing a book or being a mom or something like that. But I certainly am a definite believer. One of the things that fascinated me about Alexander was that he was someone who, even as a young boy, was completely cognizant of his destiny and never doubted it for a minute. And I, as a contrast to us poor contemporary specimens who are just riddled with self-doubt. So that was one of the things that drew me to him and to that kind of character. But I definitely believe that we each are unique, and we come into this world with talents that only we possess. It may be a very obscure and strange little talent, but it is something, and that it's our job, in my view, to find that and then to cultivate it and to let it bloom.
Now, why didn't Alexander have the self-doubt that we all have?
Well, he was a genius for step one, but he also was a king and the son of kings, and that didn't hurt in any way. But I also think that in that era, which was 2,300 years ago, it was pre-Freudian, pre-materialist, pre-Christian, Judeo-Christian. I don't think that there were as many woulds and coulds and shoulds as there are today. And as many political correctness didn't exist. If you were born the son of a king in those days, it wasn't hard to figure that what you were born to do and to embrace that.
Now, the book is called The Virtues of War, and war was looked at much differently than it is today. And so Alexander, the factors that led him to greatness back then aren't the same. Just like wars aren't looked upon the same as they are today. Are there any similarities, though? I mean, what do you suppose, and actually we just touched on it a little bit, but what do you suppose Alexander was thinking about as far as, becoming who he was, as opposed to, what we can do today? And I guess what similarities and what differences would you analyze, if that makes sense?
Well, I'll see if I can, understand what you're trying to say there, Andy. I think it's that when I titled the book The Virtues of War, it was absolutely appropriate to Alexander's way of viewing the world literally. But for us in the contemporary world, it can be read metaphorically. I mean, I'm a believer that we all are in a war, not just against external forces that confront us and that we have to overcome, but more important, with internal forces within us. Not necessarily demons and evil things like that, as just the age-old sort of vices of laziness, inattention, selfishness, that kind of thing. And so I think that we all need the kind of warrior virtues that that an ancient commander, an ancient warrior, or a contemporary one develops in themselves. Selflessness, courage, patience, that sort of thing.
Now, let's switch gears for a moment to another book that you have, and that's called The War of Art. And in that book, you talk about some of the forms of resistance. And I'm just wondering if you can maybe elaborate on that, like how our listeners can overcome resistance to achieve the greatness that resides in them.
Well, let me, we'll try to switch gears here. Now, the Virtues of War is a novel. It's a historical novel about Alexander the Great. The War of Art is a is a kind of a short book that I wrote ago about the craft of writing, really. So it's nonfiction. It's not fiction. And it's really about, well, one of the opening chapters, it's about three sentences long, says that there's a secret that writers, that real writers know, that wannabe writers don't know. And the secret is this. It's not the writing that's the hard part. It's the sitting down to write. And that what is what makes it hard to sit down is resistance. And resistance is just a name that I've kind of given in my own mind, resistance with a capital R, to those kind of negative forces that prevent us, negative self-sabotage forces within ourselves to prevent us from living out our dreams. I'm a believer that we all have two lives. We have the life that we live, and then we have this unlived life between us. And it's a kind of, I'm a writer, so I look at it from that point of view, but it can certainly be extrapolated to any number of fields. And the question is, what keeps writers from writing? How many people do we know who have books in them, they want to do it, but they never can quite sit down to do it? Or keeps an artist from painting, or keeps a budding entrepreneur from opening a business? There's some negative self-sabotaging force within us that seems to hold us back and comes up with, makes us procrastinate, comes up with all kinds of excuses and rationales why, well, we're not going to do it today, or we're not going to do it then, and just stop us from living out who we really are. So that's what, in a nutshell, Andy, that's kind of how I define the word resistance in this book, The War of Art.
Now, how do we combat that? And I'm sure you talk about that in the book. Is there anything that maybe some hints that you can divulge?
Well, I'll really cut to the chase quickly here. I mean, first let me just say this, that for me, in my own kind of development, this book is really sort of a report from the trenches, just of one writer who's been through the mill and, you know, had the hell kicked out of him by resistance for years and years. I mean, I lost a marriage. I moved 13 different times in one five-year stretch. I acted out all of the kind of vices and distractions that anybody does before finally just sitting down at the blank page and doing what I was supposed to do from the start. So this is just my answer to it. Now, there are a lot of other answers, but this is mine. What has helped me to overcome resistance is just a concept that I call just turning pro, which is really just a mental shift, an attitude change. You know, an amateur, a weekend warrior, approaches something in one way, and a pro approaches something in a completely different way. And once you sort of make that switch in your head, it makes things a lot simpler. It makes you a lot more tough-minded. For instance, some of the things that a pro does, and we're all pros in our own way, just in our jobs, but let me just list a couple of things that a pro does, and this will sort of define this a little bit, I hope. For one thing, a pro shows up for work every day. He doesn't accept any excuses if he's got a cold or anything. He's got to show up every day. The other thing is he stays there every day on the job. He doesn't quit halfway through. A pro has a kind of a lunch pail, hard hat attitude towards things. He's not a prima donna. A pro tries to demystify things. A pro treats it as work. A pro will not accept excuses for something. And will not let himself off the hook. There's a famous story that when Tiger Woods was at Stanford, and it rains a lot in that part of the country, and when it used to be pouring down rain, Tiger would go to the range, to the driving range, and he would be practicing in the range. And why was he doing that? Because he knew at some point he was going to be playing for the U.S. Open or the Masters in pouring rain, and he was going to have to know how to do it. So that's a pro. So many of us, when the alarm clock goes off, find a million excuses not to get out of bed or not to face what we know we have to face. But if you adopt a professional attitude and think of yourself as a pro, that can really help.
That is such a refreshing way. You know, I mean, we've interviewed so many people for this site, and this is the first time I've ever heard it talked about in that type of of context. And so,
well, you know, Andy, just at the risk of adding one other thing here for whatever this is worth, I knew a young woman a few years ago. She was like about 35 or something like that. I worked with her. And she took up golf, and she fell in love with golf the way people sometimes do. And one time we went out to play, and she told me what her attitude was. She had just been playing for like a month, and she said, you know, I can't break 100 yet, but I tell you, when I put those clubs in the car and I head to the golf course, I think of myself as a professional, and I dress right, and I keep my attitude right. I don't lose my temper or my patience out on the golf course. I'm a pro, and she now has been club champion, you know, 15 different times. So that's the attitude.
And actually, this segues nice into my next question, because I'm going to quote one of the things you say in The War of Art. We are not born with unlimited choices. Our job in this lifetime is not to shape ourselves into some ideal that we imagine we ought to be, but to find out who we already are and become it. Can you explain that in depth?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Andy. And this is just my philosophy. I may be wrong, but whatever it's worth, this is my view of things. I believe that we're not born as blank slates, as tabula rasa, as they say. And if you have kids, or even if you just have had a litter of puppies or kittens, you know that they all come out as their own distinct self right from the womb. Even identical twins who have the exact same genetic material are absolutely different right from the start. And this is what Wordsworth meant in his famous poem, Intimations of Immortality, where he says that not in utter nakedness, you know, are we born, but trailing clouds of glory do we come. In other words, he felt that, and I agree, that we arrive, you know, at birth already as a highly refined and individuated soul, and with a certain gift. This all kind of falls into the idea that we do have a destiny, and we do have, we're all born with some seed of greatness in it, for wherever it may be. And you can try to become an NBA basketball player or any other one of these crazy dreams that people have. But if you're not born for it, you're not gonna be able to do it. So, to me, the task of life is to find out what we were born for to do, what we were born to do, and then do it.
Now, I suppose there must be signs that we should be recognizing along the way.
One of the things that I believe about resistance, and this is that it can help us. For one of the sort of laws of resistance is, in my view, that thing which we were meant to do, what our soul was meant to do, that's the thing we're going to be most afraid of. Fear is going to come up like a giant wall when we think about doing that thing, whether it's writing our symphony, you know, moving to Calcutta and working with Mother Teresa, whatever it is. And so, in a way, if we sort of get kind of quiet and in communication with our inner voice and wait to see what thing absolutely terrifies us, that's the thing we have to do.
Wow. That's amazing. Now, is there, you know, whether it's intentional or not, is there any running theme throughout your body of work? I mean, we have here The War of Art, and we have The Virtues of War, and we also have The Legend of Bagger Vance, which we didn't even touch on tonight. But any theme that deals with overcoming obstacles to achieve greatness or deep personal fulfillment, can you give us an example of how you've done that in your own life to also, in addition to the running theme question?
Well, that's another very good question, Andy. And you know, I've asked that myself because people say, well, gee, you wrote this book, The Legend of Bagger Vance, it's about golf. Then there are other books about ancient Greece. What is the connection? And I think that there is a connection. And it's a lot about what we were talking about here. For one thing, I see life as an internal battle, as a struggle against various vices, temptations, weaknesses, against our lower self. And that one needs to be something of a warrior to take on those demons, and that what we're trying to do is to become our real self. Now, in The Legend of Bagger Vance, which was a golf story, and I'm talking about the book now, not the movie, there's a concept called the authentic swing, capitalized, the authentic swing, and the theory there was that we're all born with our own authentic swing. We can't swing like Ben Hogan. We can't swing like Ernie Els. We just have our own swing, and it's our job to swing that authentic swing. And so that's a metaphor for the authentic self, or for being who we were born to be. And the sort of, in order to become that, though, you don't just wish yourself to become that. It's a real struggle, because resistance and these negative forces are going to try to prevent us from doing that with all of their might. And so we need to have either an attitude like a professional, as I was just saying, or like a warrior or a hard hat, lunch pail kind of a guy to face those demons and to push through them to become who we were born to be.
Now, how have you done that in your own life, Stephen?
Well, me, I'm a born writer. Now, it took me a million years to figure that out and to face that. And a lot of things went wrong. I wrote for like 17 years before I got my first paycheck, which was $3,500, and it was another 10 years after that before I published my first book. So it's been a long, long road for me. But I have, evolved to the place where I've taught myself the various internal skills and the self-discipline, the self-motivation, the self-validation, where I can do it. I've learned how to do it. I've made myself a pro in that way. That doesn't mean that there are a lot of other areas of my life that are all screwed up, but in that one area, I have, managed to do what I was supposed to do.
Now, this final question is directed, if you could, to our Audio Motivation members who are listening right now. What advice can you offer them on how to let their inner light shine in their own lives so they can start achieving more and becoming who they were meant to be themselves?
Well, that's a hell of a question, too. But first of all, I would say that the most important aspect of this is the will. It takes, in my opinion, in my experience, tremendous willpower to do what it is you're supposed to do. There are obstacles come up inside you and outside you that can only be overcome by will. There's no magic bullet. There's nothing you can buy. There's no trick. There's no royal road. You just have to have the will to do it. Now, the other thing is, however, that I think we all, the good news, the positive side, is that there are forces that are out there to help us. Goethe, the famous German writer, said that there's magic in just making a start, in just beginning something. That once you do that, forces kind of rally to you and will help you. The other thing I would say is that if there's anything, we dream too small. And we should each have, like Alexander, have a lot more faith in ourselves and not be afraid to dream big and not be afraid to go for it. There's the Spartan king, the ancient Spartan king Leonidas, was once asked what was the supreme warrior virtue from which all other virtues derived, and he said, contempt for death. Now, for us, I would say contempt for failure. That's the thing. We have to just not be afraid to fall on our faces. Show some guts, get out there in the real world, and give it a crack. And that's if anybody asks me advice, as you just have, Andy, that's what I would say.
Well, that is great advice. And Stephen Pressfield, I think you helped a lot of people turn pro tonight. And I appreciate you joining us here at Audio Motivation, and I wish you all the best.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Andy. Thanks for having me, and I hope that that helps. And all my best to all your audio motivation listeners.
Thanks, Stephen.